Welcome to episode 8 of The Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, hordes, and whatever else is on our minds. Hey everybody, and welcome to The Iron Agenda, the podcast you can bring home to mama. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Pat.
So how you guys been?
Pretty good.
Not too bad.
Wait a minute, it's just us three today.
It is just us. We have a ghost guest who won't say anything because there's nobody here.
Wow, that was...
That's deep.
I didn't think my house was haunted, but...
So, you know, Halloween is until a little bit away, but now it is the season of the War Machine Horde League.
One thing I like about the start of the league is the first dispatch that came out.
Yeah.
Striker's dead.
Oh, really? I didn't read it.
It's written from the time frame of the beginning of Legends, more or less, when he was rescuing Midnights from the temple. And, the notice went out, Striker thought dead, or right, Striker found dead, or whatever.
And it's not the first time, either. I think last tour, they had the whole thing where his, his imposter, but he had a double or something out there. I can't remember exactly.
That was Kane.
Was it Kane?
He ambushed Magnus. Oh, Kane.
Okay. Yeah.
That's right. So.
I wish he'd just actually die.
You know, this might be a topic for another time. I don't see anything wrong with killing off a Warcaster. It doesn't mean you can't play with it. It changes the story, but when you're playing on the table, that doesn't have anything to do with the fluff.
Yeah, that's true.
It depends on who you ask. But if you ask me,
I'm right, and that's how it is.
That's a good attitude to take.
All right, then.
Story's over.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time.
We'll save that one for another time. So, leagues.
Leagues. What do you guys think about the league? Do you guys like having the league?
No, not really.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be a boring episode.
It is. Okay, I guess I should expand on that, huh?
Probably.
I guess I'm just getting tired of the leagues. It seems like they're constantly running. They last, what, 4 or 5 weeks?
Yeah, there's an 8-week period, and you play 5 of the 8 weeks.
So 5 of the 8 weeks, 4 seasons, that's 20 weeks of league play.
And not including Summer Rampage.
Right, and there's things like Summer Rampage. There's a time off during the Summer Con season when, there are no leagues. It just seems like most of the time, whenever we're up at the game store, it's for league play.
That's true. Well, the last league was the whole boat. They had the slew of boat scenarios. Is that right?
Yeah.
To me, that seems like it was kind of a long time ago. But I think as the league starts again, I'm probably going to get sick of it after week one or two.
There has been a good time off between the league seasons. But still, now that it's already back, I actually looked at the week one dispatch and was sort of looking at like the overall awards and just sort of glanced at some of the scenarios. I wasn't enthused. I'm burnt out on it. Like I think there's a lot of people that are burnt out on the league, and I think that I definitely count myself among those people.
I think there only needs to be about 2 a year.
I agree. I think 2 would be good, but considering we can't change the fact we're about to come into a league, and I'm like you guys, I think we'll all be playing anyway.
Right.
Just because, well, we're lucky in St. Louis, we don't have to pay for the league.
Yeah.
So we're pretty fortunate that way. So why not play? And considering a lot of times people don't even bother with the scenarios, they play a league game without really playing a league game. That's how half of my games end up, I think. Keeping that in mind, do you guys play the league as it's meant to be, sort of a competitive thing? Or do you nowadays play more casual? I'm guessing the latter.
I think I play the league as it's meant to be played, and I don't think that's necessarily competitive.
Okay.
I reject your assertion.
Well, I sort of disagree with you, and this has been kind of a debate around here. Yes, the league on paper is just meant to encourage friendly play and, a lot of play, but a lot of people do take it fairly seriously. I am one of those people that do. And the first couple leagues that we've played the first year of league and then the first couple seasons of this league, I played it fairly competitively. At least I approached it that way, trying to play for some of the awards and this, that, and the other, going for the streaks and whatnot. But the first 2 seasons of this league, I burn out on it because, the scenarios are somewhat repetitive and they're easily broken. I'll put it that way. Some scenarios are really good for certain factions, casters. It makes it really an easy button kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets old for certainly the people playing, against it. They get sort of frustrated, but that's kind of the way they built it around there. So I think that all that stuff mashed it together has just, I'm just burnt out on it. And I'm just not really excited about it. I am looking forward to going up and playing, like you're saying, just playing some games, not necessarily as the scenario dictates, but just play some games with some friends and say, oh, hey, you know what? Let's count that as a league game because that way I can get my pin.
Yeah.
You know,
playing that way, if you're not playing with a scenario, well, you're not helping yourself to getting a particular award, you know, most primary victories or whatever, if that happens to be an award, but you're still able to play. And other people can obviously still play toward those other awards. So there's not really, you playing your way doesn't really interfere with other people playing their way necessarily.
That's true.
I actually like the scenarios myself. I like the scenario play as opposed to just kill the caster because it's something different to do. The problem is they add complexities to the scenarios. It just makes it that much easier for certain armies to be tooled directly for them. And then you start getting into an arms race in your opponent, and that's when it can start to get competitive.
Well, I think, I mean, that's done by design. For good or for bad, I think the game, the league is supposed to be competitive. I mean, you have awards that you're going for. I think it's as competitive as a tournament is competitive. Except, right. And you can play a tournament non-competitive, but, you know, why would you pay an entry fee to do that? And at least in our situation, not having to pay for the league, I think it's a lot easier to play it in a casual manner. Whether or not Privateer wants it to be a competitive thing, I guess, is neither here nor there.
Let me back up just a minute. I guess I should clarify. An earlier statement is, you know, I said I don't think the leagues were made to be competitive. But I actually agree with you. Any time that there is a merit-based reward system, it is by definition a competitive event.
Right.
I get the impression that's not how it was intended.
Really?
But that's it just, you know, it seems like it's a number of, here's some scenarios for fun. Go have fun, you know, playing, wrecking boats or destroying watchtowers or crossing trenches.
If Privateer did gear this to be a competitive environment, what do you think are the problems with that? I mean, we might have problems because we get burnt out on it or something like that. In general, what's the problem with it being competitive?
Well, I guess that depends on who you ask. For me, part of the problem with it being competitive is I don't think it's a very good competitive event because of the fact that the awards ultimately go to the person who plays the most games.
In some cases, sure. You know, that used to be a much bigger problem than it is nowadays, but still, playing a large quantity of games can give you an edge. It used to be that you would get an award just for playing the most games, which obviously is going to give the person who has the most time, most likely, that award.
Sure, but looking at our results for the past couple seasons, the people who have gotten the awards, usually two or three go to one person.
Oh, sure, there's a correlation.
It's the person who played the most games.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it just, I kind of basically come to the realization that I'm not going to play a bunch of games. I play maybe one or two a week.
Right.
It's not even worth really worrying about for me. But I do want to still try the scenarios. I want to have fun with them. The problem is I don't know if I'm going to run up into someone who has tooled their list to win top of turn one. And that's not how I want to spend my one or two games a week playing.
So am I correct in saying, and I know this is correct for me, I just want to see if this is your case, you don't mind not really being able to get the award because of time restrictions, but you do mind going up against somebody who is gearing their playstyle to get an award. Is that sort of it?
Yes and no. I think what it comes down to is there are basically two tiers of players playing the leagues, is the people who are trying to get awards and the people who are just wanting to play to have fun. And the problem you're going to run into is, well, what happens when those two groups play each other?
Sure.
The people who are there to have fun aren't going to have fun, and the people who are there who are there to have just trying to get awards are going to have an easier time because they're playing opponents who aren't going to take it as seriously.
I think it's more of a spectrum than two tiers, but I see what you're saying, though. Obviously, you're not going to have one guy who's completely casual and another guy who's, oh, I got to win this game. But yeah, you know, the twain are going to meet at some point. I know my play style has changed over the tours. You know, there was one league where I had the opportunity and the time to play just a ton of games, and that garnered me multiple awards. Since then, I've been I wouldn't say burned out, but since then I've really been much more casual in all the leagues that we have had. So, yeah.
And I had this exact same experience that you did, Josh, that the season after that you won, I was actually the season that I sort of stepped up my play and played a lot of games, and I actually won that season. And I came out with, again, multiple awards there too. And then since then I've tried to stay competitive, but I just sort of burned out on it in these last couple seasons. It just wasn't.
Well, on top of that, you also have a new family.
Well, right. I was going to say that, you know,
your time.
My big thing is that I don't have the time to dedicate to it anymore. So, yeah, I can't play more than maybe one or two games a week. Actually, the last season, I think I played maybe the first couple of weeks. And after that, I didn't even get a game in. So I played like two games or something like that the whole league season. So I would like to play more this season. But again, it's going to be casual. And, you know, I don't know.
I kind of wish we had somebody from a different city or a different area here to talk about this with a different league structure, because we have three stores that run leagues. We have, I think this tour, we're going to have 4 days a week you can play.
Yep.
Something like that. With, I think, at least one of those, possibly two of those, being open days where you can play at any store. But either way, we have plenty of days to play on. We have lots of players. And so somewhere in that mix, you're going to find somebody who might go for the quantity over quality. And that sounds bad when I say that, because I have no problem with somebody wanting to get the award if that person wants to go for the award.
To build on what you're saying, Josh, I've read on the private press forums, people from around the world actually talking about their league experiences. And we know that St. Louis has the biggest league in the world. Probably. In terms of numbers. So that's huge right there. But a lot of the ones that I see online, you know, they're talking about their league consisted of, it looks like, you know, a handful of players, maybe 6 to 10 or maybe 15 right. total. And in that situation, it's a lot different. I mean, if you only got 10, you know, say 10 people that you're going to be able to be playing against, I think that on a smaller scope, I don't think you're going to have as much of a problem that we're talking about here, you know, going to the extremes.
I think it's going to be even bigger.
Ultra. Well, I disagree. I
well, let's say you have 10 people. And you're split over like 4 weeks. If you've only got 10 people in your community, I'm going to guess here. I might not be correct, but I would assume that it's not everybody's going to make it every week. Mm-hmm. Well, that one guy who's really dedicated and really wants to play and shows up every week is probably going to come out on top over the people who maybe come 3 out of the 5 weeks.
Possibly.
True.
I my guess is, though, with a larger population, that probably going to crop up more and more is my guess.
I think so, too, because with the larger group, you know, the handful of people that are really going for a lot of games, they've got the ability to, because they've got all these people in a small group of, you know, say 10 people.
I can see it happening.
That, you know, you don't have as much opportunity.
Sure. I mean, I can see it happening, because if that's the case in a particular area, well, that's how it's going to carry out. But if the area doesn't have that person, then it might be more balanced, more toned down. Of course, it's going to depend on the population.
Sure, and this is—I mean, this is speculating. I don't know. I mean, unless we went through it, I wouldn't know. But I'm hazarding a guess that I think that the smaller numbers, we wouldn't have the polar opposites that we're talking about here in this large league.
I'd like to have people go on our forums and tell me about their league experience.
That's true.
That's really good. Or leave us a voicemail,
or email a voicemail, us. Or email. Wow, we have all these methods of communication.
We do.
So anyway, as I was saying, we've got a large league. You know, somewhere approaching like. Somewhere around 50 people playing.
More than that. Last season we had, oh shit, I don't have it in front of me. We had somewhere around 60 people play at least one game.
Wow, that's a lot.
50 or 60 people.
And now the unique thing is we've got a pretty good tracking system here in St. Louis. One of our own here has worked on. So why don't you talk a little bit about that, Jeff? I think that's a pretty cool thing.
When the league started, we actually used an Excel spreadsheet made by one of our press gangers. I think it was Impulse, our press ganger Impulse, I believe. I think so.
Either him or DC, one of the two.
One of those guys made it. And so, and that worked just fine. But at that time, we had the league at one store.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever the league split up into multiple stores, we had the problem of keeping everybody's games.
The problem is that points gained through playing a game is dependent on the difference between your position and your opponent's position.
Right.
And you have to keep that up to date in order to accurately track that.
Right.
And passing an Excel file back or forth, it wasn't as fast as people moving from store to store.
Right. So I came up with the idea. Well, I was approached with that, with doing this whenever it turned out that we were in dire straits for this.
There's actually a little bit more history behind that.
Oh, yeah?
I was tapped to write this program before.
Okay. Why didn't you do it?
I started on it. I actually was writing it completely from scratch, whole object-oriented thing, way more work than I needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working on it, and the store owner at the store that we were playing at primarily at the time
mm-hmm.
threw something together in Ruby on Rails. He was making a lot more progress and faster because he had a lot of the architecture built for him.
Right.
And so I, you know, it's like, okay, well, I'll just set mine aside, you know, go ahead and work with what you got because you can get it done faster. And he never did.
Yeah, we used it for one league and then he kind of dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you had one in progress though. So this was last year that somebody came up to me and asked if it was possible. I said, yeah, it's possible. So I threw something together in a few days because we needed it. The league was about to start. And so I just kind of developed it from there. And if somebody's interested in seeing it, you can go to the www.gamesstlouis.com. And on the left, there's a league tracker or a league link, and it'll take you to the page. If by any chance somebody out there thinks their community could use this tool, give me a shout out at josh@ironagenda.com, and we'll see what we can do to get you the tool. You can take a look and see how we track our league. Mm-hmm. It works pretty well.
It does. And I didn't do any of the coding, but I'm a playtester, so to speak.
Pat has found Josh more bugs in this thing than anybody combined.
And that was actually because of my competitive spirit. I was keeping track of what was going on and things, and game would get put in there. And so I'd go in and look at it and I'm like, oh, that's not quite right. It looks like it's not quite doing that. So I'd shoot Josh an email saying, hey, it looks like this is a little bit wonky, and he'd go out and fix it and be good. So
absolutely.
I helped.
Oh, definitely. And several people have sent bugs in that.
Yeah.
Those are very much appreciated. As for the scenarios, you know, I have my complaints about the scenarios we had last year with the boats. They seemed a little humdrum to me. They seemed really the same to me. and I haven't looked at this tours too much, but what do you guys think about the different scenarios overall?
Well, I was going to say, because Dave mentioned earlier that he really liked the scenarios.
I like the variety. I don't like the scenarios.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I like the variety in play styles. I don't necessarily like all the scenario designs themselves.
Okay. And I agree with you. Some of the scenarios I just don't like. I think they're really kind of weird, but I like the variety too, because before the league started, I had gotten burnt out and sick of just playing assassination games. I mean, basically I'm playing this game and the point is I'm going to kill your cast and that's the only way to win. So then we got these scenarios where there's other ways to win. That kind of, excited me, to be honest with you. I'm like, well, that's neat. It's some other way to win other than just killing the guy.
Were you titillated?
I was. I was as happy. I was titillated like a, anyway.
Like a happy clam.
Yes. But anyway, yes, I'm as happy as a clam, Josh. Because it was just something different. So, you get all these scenarios and you read through them and you start building a list around them because, well, there's scenario victory, and to accomplish it, you try to build a list that will work that way. And that gets into what you're talking about. You build a list that is going to help you win this as quickly as possible. And in some instances, that's going to be top of turn one.
So which is it? Do you like the scenarios because of that, or you do not like the scenarios because of that?
I wish you did know the scenario when you picked your army list. I think that would fix this problem.
That would be like playing Steamroller at a tournament. Would.
No, well, no. In Steamroller, you pick your list after you know the scenario.
That's true. Well, okay.
But well, I see what I you're getting at. But that way you can't tailor it.
Yeah.
You'll have a 1 in like 8 chance of picking
a more
one.
General list is going to be more fun to play. You're not going to face the top of turn 1 victory as often. Now, granted, you might wind up randomly getting that one scenario that you can win really quickly, but it forces a more well-rounded army composition. Mm-hmm. I mean, now the downside is that by forcing the well-rounded army composition, you're pretty much excluding list types that you don't see otherwise.
Right, exactly. Unless you have somebody who just on a lark wants to play those.
Right.
That's
true. So that's a good point that you bring up, Dave. I mean, maybe there are some instances where you want to play this weird list. It's sort of a, there's a trick to the list, but you're never going to play it in a general match because it's just so one-sided.
Because typically you don't have towers that you have to destroy with Sigmar.
Well, exactly. And I was going to say, just to throw it out there, I mean, I'm guilty of this. I play Sigmar, obviously, and Siege against any kind of a structure is brutal. And that's what a lot of these scenarios have been. And that's an easy win for Sigmar. And it usually is within the first round. Maybe not top of turn one, but usually by the top of the second round, I was able to win these games just because of what Sigmar can do with, what Siege can do versus structures. So, and they tried to address that. They've tried to make it a little bit harder, but still it's sort of broken down. So it's a double-edged sort of what you're saying. Yes, I like the scenarios because I like to be able to play for a certain, type of a victory, but no, I don't want to go in and just say, okay, I set up, I go first. I just won. Thanks for the game. I mean, I hate that. I feel bad about that. And of course, my opponents think I'm an absolute dick. So,
they're
to be fair,
wrong.
They're not all the time.
Right.
Hey, nothing to do with the league.
I've got a reputation to uphold, bitches.
Well, I mean, here you go, dear Privateer Press. I mean, look at the way the Summer Rampage was, where there were a bunch of different territories. Each territory had a collection of scenarios you could play, and it was randomly determined for the game. Well, use something like that and add a stipulation that you pick your army list before you pick the scenario. And now you have a good idea of what you might be doing, but you don't know exactly which scenario you're going to play.
Mm-hmm. I think that would help. Like I said, it fixes that problem because then you're not just tailoring a list specifically for that thing. But again, it's a give and take thing. On the one hand, that's going to prevent players from being able to go in and say, well, I want to try this weird little list that
I don't think it will.
I do though. I mean, cause if I'm not going to take, and I don't have a good example, and I'm not going to take this, this one list, this glass cannon type of a list for this one little thing that's just weird and I want to try it. If I'm just going to go up against a list that's more well-rounded or whatever, that's just going to run over me.
Yeah, but you never know.
I will do it in a fun game. I mean, if you're just playing it for fun, I want to see how this works. That's different. I mean, but if you're playing in more of a competitive situation, then that's not something that you're going to do. I'm like, I wouldn't. I'm not going to go into a situation where there's that much unknown with like an unstable type of a list. That's just personally, I wouldn't.
And that's kind of part of the problem. The root is the whole arms race. You don't want to go up against a person who has a tooled list with an untooled list. Mm-hmm. So because of that, no one brings an untooled list.
Right. Yeah. And again, I'm not disagreeing with you, Dave. I think that that is a problem with the league. I'm just trying to get, like you're saying, get the devil's advocate out there and get both sides represented. There's problems need to be addressed, need to be fixed. I hope that it can be.
I'm trying to think of this in terms of, you know, other people's perspective, which we don't have anybody but us here. I can imagine for
there's the ghost over there, but he's not saying much.
He's giving me the finger. I imagine in places where there aren't a lot of tournaments, for example, where there isn't a lot of competitive play, I can see the league really being something that people look forward to and really want to play competitively.
Sure.
So we have to we've said this before, but you know, this is just our perspective, obviously, from our particular geographic area. Our meta is much different than a lot of other people's.
Sure. During the length of the league, we're probably going to have 3 or 4 tournaments.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
Well, and War Machine Weekend.
And War Machine Weekend, right.
There's a lot of stuff going
on. Which, by the way, we will all be at. So you can look for the Iron Agenda at War Machine Weekend in Springfield, Missouri.
October 17th through the 19th.
There you go.
It's a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
So are we going to try to do a podcast while we're there?
We're going
to
do something.
We don't know yet.
Surely we got to do something.
Well,
we definitely need to try.
If it's us outside in the bitter cold with one microphone, we're going to be there.
It's not going to be bitterly cold. It's Springfield. It's kind of like here.
Really?
It's my hometown. I'm going to be down there staying with the old family.
The old family?
Yeah.
As opposed to the new family? You've traded them in.
I'm going to stay with the old and the new family as opposed to you guys are going to have to stay at the Lamplighter Inn.
No, we're staying at some other hole in the wall. It's a super
there old. You go.
Ooh.
Enjoy. Oh, I know. It's up by my house, parents' house.
It's the one in Battlefield area.
Yeah, Battlefield Battlefield in 65.
Yeah, the hole.
It's actually right over by my old high school.
I'll tell you one thing that I really like about the league, and I think this might be the case wherever you are, at least lately, and maybe this just past year, they've really pushed new types of terrain. We had the boats. That was huge here. We had how many people put together new boats?
I think we got about 8, 10.
And these weren't just like photocopies. These were not 2D things. These were huge structures that people are still building and putting together.
I would say, unfortunately, I don't think any of the boats got completed before the end of that league. But
that's right.
There's some new ones.
We have plans.
It's going to be great to play some of these, on these.
Like Ray, he was our guest. Not too long ago, he is, I don't know if I can say this, so we might have to get with him before I say this, or before I edit it out. He's collecting all these troll heads. Have you heard what he's, he said this out loud, so this isn't hidden. He's putting the troll heads on the posts on the railings of the boats, and he's going to put chain between each one. Cool. So they're like little heads on the post, and I think that's just going to look
that's
awesome.
That's neat.
But one of our other PGers, Chris, he's making his cricks. I can't remember what he called it, but it's all spiky and necroventy and all this crazy cricks looking thing.
AK built Coleman's Demise.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Is he actually going to have Stryker on the front on the prow or something?
Inside of the wheelhouse, you can see
Ford.
The wheel. You can see Quicksilver hung up on the wall like a
nice.
Trophy.
See, stuff like that. I love seeing people do that. I wouldn't do it because mine would just come out misshapen. And maybe that'd be appropriate. Maybe it's a cruddy crick ship.
I was going to build one, but it's like, what the heck does the protector need with a boat?
Ships of
you'd,
the sand.
You'd want something more along the lines of like Jabba's,
a sail skiff, barge.
The sail
that'd
barge,
be funny.
Yeah.
But and this season we have, I haven't looked at it too closely, some big walls with gates and whatnot. It's a little more static. It's not as cool necessarily.
There's also fire fonts.
Is this Caspia Sul?
Yeah, we're basically playing during the timeline of the
Caspia Sul Incursion
Legends.
Is what it's called. Yeah. I really like to see people put these cool things together. We have some really talented terrain people up here, and they make some really cool stuff.
And I agree with you. The other thing that they've done is they've got their maps down to where you, instead of just throwing terrain out there sort of willy-nilly, it's pretty much dictated, this is where the terrain's going to be, and it's sort of symmetric. So
unless there's
not
like an attack or defender thing, it's typically symmetric.
Right, those are different, but...
Put it this way, I mean, like, if I'm putting terrain on the table, usually, I go grab 2 hills, 2 forests, and 2 walls, and I throw them out in generally the same shape.
That's exactly what I do.
Every time.
Sometimes there'll be a little bit of water.
Yeah.
But that's usually just for a goof.
And I think most people do that. But I do like this because what it does, and I think they've done this, they've done this in Steamroller as well. You know, you've got it laid out so that basically both sides of the table are fairly equal. Mm-hmm. And it's not that somebody's going to have a strategic advantage from the terrain being one side or the other. So I think that's good. But yeah, I like all the new terrain they've got. They've got some weird stuff. It's just more things to learn because, man, a lot of times you'll be playing through a game like all of a sudden I'm in a wheat field. What does that mean? And you have to go look and say, oh, okay, that's what it is. Or
I never know what the wheat fields do.
You know, I think you can set them on fire and it's crazy.
Sometimes you get concealment. Sometimes you can go through it if you're big. I can't remember.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of wild.
You guys mentioned we do have like a lot of people who are really good at terrain making here in St. Louis. The problem is that number is not proportional to the number of people in the league.
That's absolutely right.
So 90% of our league terrain is still quickly cut out foam and whatnot because
that's true.
We simply don't have the time to make, for example, the 60 hills necessary
to
furnish the league.
It is possible over the course of several tours, you might end up with a number you need, but yeah, you're still going to wind up with, oh, we don't have any sixes. Well, I guess we're going to be using an 8-inch all this time or something like that.
And luckily, they've just been building on the terrain as opposed to scrapping it after each season. I mean, there is some in and out, but generally I've seen that you've got some new pieces, but we're still using the old pieces, which is good because you can recycle what you've got. Because, yeah, in a five-week span, that's a lot to get done just to, like you said, for 60 people to play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about the whole rewarding number of games played a little bit more than quality of games played?
I'm a little biased, I think, because I did win a lot of awards a couple years ago or whenever it was. Since then, I haven't cared.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I could speak with any non-bias there. If you have the time and means, I mean, it's geared toward you being able to do that. So in the context of a league, it's perfectly fine. But I can see how it might get on some people's nerves.
Talking about the number of games played, when I won the league season, I think I played 18 games, and I think you said you played about 26.
I played 20 some odd, I can't remember.
And for me, that's a lot of games. That's, you know, essentially, break it down in over 6 weeks, that's an average of 3 games a week, obviously. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's a lot. I have a son, you know, I'm a new dad, so that's very time consuming. And I haven't been able to do that since. And with that said, from the very beginning of league, you know, we talked about this on the forums, on the local forums even, I had an issue. I brought up the issue of the whole point of, I guess it got down to quality versus quantity. And they were talking about, I look at a league as a classical definition of league. Like in anything else where you have league play, like in bowling or baseball or, you know, softball, anything like that, that means that everybody that's in the league plays the same amount of games. And then at the end of that, you know, it's whoever has the best record is the winner. That's not what this league is about. It's open play. You can play as many or as few games as you want, and that's just the way it's defined. What I said back then was, that's fine. Well, then just don't call it a league, because league carries that connotation with it just by the very definition of what league play means.
So you think changing the name might actually change the tone of the entire event?
Well, I guess it could, because...
Well, and there's a lot in the name.
Well, that's true. I mean, I'm not wrong here, guys. I mean, well, agree or not, but, you know, like I said, in a sports league, Team A is not going to be able to go out and play 100 games because they've got the time.
Well, we essentially have that.
Team B that has, you know, they only could get in 5 games.
A league in the normal sense would be a 6 or 5 week long tournament, as we know them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when we have tournaments, so why do that? I don't like being at a store for 7 or 8 hours playing a tournament. I don't want to spend 6 weeks doing it. That's just me.
True. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it just all boils down to the fact of what, you know, what do you call it? And, you know, like you said, you're throwing in the merits, you're throwing in the awards, which there's competitiveness inherent in that system. But it's supposed to be fun. And I have had fun. I've had a lot of fun playing with all my opponents. I hope that they had a good time too. But, you know, there are those games, you know, it is competitive. It's not as so as like your weekly tournaments maybe, but your steamroller tournaments, but it is.
What do you think if there were some sort of, this might be just a local thing, if you had some like goofy awards, like the person who played the most games with a necrosurgeon or the person who lost every game, something other than the typical you've won X merit. What if you had something more light, more with more levity, like you were saying, it's supposed to be fun. How do you change the competitiveness so that's not as harsh? Isn't the word I'm looking for? Am I getting
well? I think there's two problems. That one's going to be those, you know, designing those little words to, well, you know, most games won with a necrosurgeon. I'm sure Vader could sacrifice 9 points of his list to throw a necrosurgeon in every time and still threaten to take the league.
Well, maybe that may have been a bad example, but
that's my point though. It's designing little awards like that is a skill. It would be a skill in and of itself.
Could be whoever created the best boat.
Could be. The other side of that is, will this have any impact in the actual play, or will it just be a little goofy thing that's done at the end?
Well, if somebody wants an award, but they know that they can't because they can't play 100 games, it might be something that they could go for. It's neither a quality nor a quantity thing in some respects.
Depends on what they are.
Well, sure, sure. And you'd have to go, I mean, this may be completely off base. Maybe this is a stupid idea. It's not out of the question, but you know, maybe there's something else that could be done without actually changing the league.
I don't know.
The only thing I can think of, I just, as you're talking about it, I'm thinking, you know, what could you do? Well, most games played with a necrosurgeon, most warjacks lost to, I don't know, solos or whatever. But again, all of those types of awards, the person who plays the most games has a chance of just happening into.
Sure. I guess my original thought was have the award be something that most people wouldn't want to do. But then that means it probably wouldn't be fun, so why do it in the first place?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, door prize type things.
Door prize, work. That would be fantastic, actually. Something that has absolutely nothing to do with whether you won a game.
But I don't want to ask a store to, or somebody to, you know, give out a door prize for League when we're not paying to play.
Well, and, you know...
Not that I wouldn't pay to play.
Absolutely. The first couple leagues we did play. Mm-hmm. We paid, I think, $7 or $9
It was a nominal fee. I love the fact that it's that league pay, that to play in the league is free here, but I would be absolutely more than willing to pay for it. I mean, it's not that much money, and it's a lot of fun. So
it's no different than playing in a tournament, more or less. At least around here, ours tend to be $5 or $10.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's doable. It's a reasonable fee. It's not an exorbitant amount, but. You know, you're talking about sort of these things you're talking about. I was just thinking one of the things that I kind of don't like about the league here in St. Louis is, and it stems from the fact that we're so big and we're playing at three different stores. There are a lot of people that play at the two stores that I don't play at that I've never even met. I don't even see them. And I think one of the things I don't like about the league is the fact that you've got all these people playing at multiple, you know, either at multiple stores or just at one store and you never see them. So, you're in a league with people, but you never see them. You never play against them, so you don't even know who they are. Now, it hasn't happened. I don't think that the winners of our league have actually played at all the stores. I believe there are at most of them, but you know, it could be a situation where some guy actually wins that plays, you know, up at say Fantasy Shop, which I just don't ever have the opportunity to get up there to see, and I never even know the guy.
Well, the Fantasy Shop folks, usually, because it's a longer drive, they're not going to come farther south.
Right.
And so if somebody wins at one of the stores down here, well, those people, the same situation.
Exactly. It's a long drive for me, so I'm not going to be going up there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not my neck of the woods kind of a thing.
We're so spread out in a large city. There may not be any way to get around that.
Well, and I think it would almost be better to have, you know, a league per store. Each store has their own league. Then you know it's going to be, you know who you're playing with because they're going to be at that store. And if all three stores have their own league, hey, you could win all three of them if you were so inclined. Yeah. But you know what I mean? It would sort of smaller group. I know that's I'm probably a wildly unpopular thing to say.
Well, they did that with Summer Rampage, locally.
I didn't play in it. I wanted to try to play some, but I didn't have the time.
Oh, Summer Rampage.
Summer talking? Rampage.
Yeah. Oh, I played. I played a game at Miniature Market.
One thing that I think might actually help, looking at the way they did Summer Rampage, is they gave out a lot of merits. Basically, they used Xbox achievements and miniature gaming. The advantage of those over awards are they are not unique.
Mm-hmm.
You get an award for doing X,
right,
not for doing the most of X or beating everyone else at X.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not really getting, you're not losing awards because someone else is playing more games than you.
It's not a zero-sum game.
Correct. Now, the person, for example, we had Mike on here recently. You know, Mike won the Grand Exemplar Award for that league worldwide because he got the most exemplar points. Those are the one exception, but, you know, I didn't play Protectorate, but if I had, that's the only award that Mike would have taken in quotes from me.
Well, weren't there 50 or something awards that you could possibly get?
I think there were more than that, but there were a lot. But yeah, every territory, when you won in that territory, you got an award, which, okay, those aren't that big of a deal, but, you know, okay, winning most of the territories, winning half the territories, those are worth awards.
Or playing, and this is something that pretty much everybody could do, play every game with every Warlock or Warcaster or something like that.
I'm not entirely thrilled with those. I've played Hordes for the Rampage for the express reason of I had less Warlocks to play through. To get that award.
Sure, it's not, I mean, that's going to be an inherent imbalance in the game, obviously, because Hordes just has fewer caps or Warlocks. But
doing, basically putting achievements in instead of awards is going to, you're not going to feel like you're slighted by not playing many games. I didn't get many achievements in the Rampage. I think I did a couple finishing moves, one of them with the Rake, by the way, who damn near killed Kruger.
Yeah, that was me.
Badass.
That was me.
You know, I got the one for doing a couple finishing moves, for doing a few Rampages, winning a game, and I think I won five games and I got something for that. You know, little things that I could, goals I could set for myself that were achievable based on my time investment.
Mm-hmm. I wish the only thing that, and I didn't care too much about this, but other people might care. I think with Xbox Live, you can somehow get an image with your current state of some games or something. You can put in a signature on various forums. As far as I
hate that.
Or do you really?
Yes, I hate.
So turn off the signatures.
Well, no, I mean, people look at that, and you know, if I see someone who has a couple championship things in their SIG, okay, well, they might have actually played a whole lot of games against really hard opponents mm-hmm. and earned theirs. Or maybe he was one of the two or three people in that league that played and he just happened to get it.
Well, it could be. But why would you care? It's a virtual token that who cares? I mean, it's something that people can get without necessarily, you know, spending hours and hours and hours mm-hmm. getting. And you know, it's just a little something that keeps people interested in the game. It's just it's a pittance almost, but, you know, it's just something extra.
I guess the difference is, you know, like I got some merits. And right. They're in my, it's now called like Privateer Press Live or Privateer
something
Press.
Something like that, yeah.
Events.com. PrivateerEvents.com.
There you go.
And they're there and I can see them. That's great, but I'm not trying to show them off.
Well, no, but some people like to do that. I mean, even if they're not trying to show off, you know, it's like putting a patch or something on your army bag. I don't know if you do that. I haven't. But some people do, just to show. It's sort of like lettering in high school. Nobody cared about that either. But I mean, I guess my original point was that I don't think Privateer has anything where you can generate an image or a link to an image in a signature.
They've been saying they're going to.
Really? Yeah. I can see how that might be easy to do. And, you know, that something like that, something that it's virtual, it costs almost nothing. Why not?
I don't know a good reason why not. Other than mm-hmm. I guess I don't put much worth in those.
Sure.
But
well, I don't either.
I mean,
when I see somebody's Xbox Live thing, I think, okay, I don't care. I don't know what half that stuff is anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, it means something to them. I don't care. It doesn't affect me. So yeah, why not? Then I live in a world of rainbows and unicorns.
I think it's interesting.
Sunshiny every day.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that we're sort of stuck on the sort of the merit, or I'm sorry, sort of the rewards mm-hmm. of the league and.
I think that's good because rewards drive play.
I do.
And I think that's the difference between the merits and the awards is the awards are, you know, some person can, it's, as Josh put it, it's, the awards are not zero sum. I'm sorry. The awards are zero sum.
Zero sum means there's a limited number.
Okay.
If you have it, then I don't.
Okay. The awards are zero sum. You know, there's only one of each. The merits are simply. They're up for grabs.
And there's multiple copies of each.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think it could be something that could help, but again, because you're sort of saying that they'd be kind of neat, but then what would you do with them? I all sort of folding back in on itself of the, you know, the problems with League being the fact that it's, you know, you're playing for something as opposed to just casual play. And I think that's what they got back at the first of all. I think the whole point of Privateer Press putting out a League was to sort of encourage more people to play, to sort of spread the word, get more people to be interested in the game and play more, say, casual games. But I think it sort of backfired on them a little bit in the fact that it became competitive, especially in a large setting. I know that it has, you know, here in St. Louis, it was a competitive thing. I assume that that's the case in other large cities and other large leagues.
I mean, I don't necessarily begrudge anybody for going and playing a whole bunch of games and winning. No. You know, if you have the time to do it, you know, good on you. But mm-hmm. it's on some levels, it's frustrating to look at it from the perspective of I don't have a chance of winning despite the fact that I maintain a pretty good points to games played ratio.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pretty decent record in the leagues, but I'm not at the top.
No.
Yeah.
And that could be, I mean, this could again just be handled locally, or it could be a bigger merit. If you play X number of games, then you're put in the running for highest average points per game. Maybe that could be a merit. That ties to quality and quantity, or ratio of them at least.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What's your winning ratio? That would be a good one because I don't play all that many games, but I've had good luck in the games I've played, so I've got a pretty good wins to losses mm-hmm. ratio as far as league goes. It's just that I don't play four or five games a week.
I think in the end, there's not going to be a perfect league for everybody.
Yeah.
Obviously, if something this complex and with this many people, you're not going to suit everybody. And
sure, we're just talking about what would suit us.
Sure, absolutely.
We're not even all of our community.
Absolutely, and we know that there are people who differ. Well, even the three of us have differed a little bit in our
sure.
opinions here.
Yeah.
So yeah. So again, go on our forums. Tell us what you think. Tell us how we're total morons.
Sure.
Please, because I get that at home all the time.
Yes, go on our forums.
I mean,
tell Josh how he's a total moron.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've driven this into the ground. So I think we have another topic to talk about today, don't we, Dave? Dirty, nasty thing that you've concocted.
Not Pat. I don't want you to get scared. This is a Hordes topic.
I'll see you guys.
All right. Well, you know, since we were talking about both competitive and casual play, I decided to bring out our first Hordes list for us to review. And this is a list that I've played in a number of events and some casual play. I played it in Food Machine.
Yes, you did.
Which was a lot of fun.
Is it Harvest Thralls? What is the name of that thing? I've heard like three different names. I think
we'll
it's Harvest Thralls.
We'll get one of them on here to talk about, and we'll tell the listeners.
Okay, I want an answer when he gets on here.
All right. Vader, we're talking to you. Anyway, I also played it in the first Summer Stampede, which was the Hordes equivalent of the Legacies tournament. And it was fun to play in both events. But this is also our first 500 point list.
Yeah.
Local, we play a lot of 750 games, but
it's pretty weird or strange to see a 500 point game around here.
Yeah, but other people are going to play smaller games, especially people who are newer to it. So I thought it'd be a good idea to bring a little bit lower point list onto the show. But my list is what I call a Legion Dozen.
And what's the problem with this?
Well, we'll get to that. This is a Legion Dozen.
What is it?
It's a 500 point list. It starts with Saren. We also have an Angelius, a Nephilim, a Seraph, a Shredder, a Forsaken, and 5 Raptors. 499 points.
Unless I'm mistaken with my math here.
Which is possible.
That's true. I think I only counted 11 models.
That's correct. You did only count 11 models.
And who's the 12th?
Well, it depends who you ask. There's 2 answers to that question. There's 2 possible answers to that. One of them is, since the Legion ignores every other rule in the game, they ignore the counting system too. The other answer is, well, it's Everblight. Because Saren has a part of the Ething.
I see. Mm. So, or it could be you are the 12th player, the 12th thing.
Yeah, no.
No?
No. Uh-uh.
All right.
It could be just that you can't count.
It could be that I can't count.
I'm going to go with that one.
All right. That's the list. It's a pretty fun list. I've actually had one of the new guys who is switching from Trolls or from Circle to Legion. You know, Luke. Luke,
yeah.
One of the hosts of the podcast.
Yes.
He decided to switch factions, and I let him play this a couple times against me, and he liked it a lot. He had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, yeah, I was there for one of the games. I remember him skewering you with the Angelius at one point.
Yeah, Resnick's on a medium base. That's not very
good. Doesn't help.
Good. No, not at all. You know, this list is great in that it has a ton of threats in it. The Angelius, 7-inch movement with wings and reach and armor piercing. You know, with Saren's 14-inch control radius. We'll start with Saren. She's a pretty fun warlock. The running talk is she's probably the most broken Legion warlock. When I actually built her for this list, I picked her randomly because I thought that any of the warlocks would have fun with this list. But I put her in mainly because her feet can cover the entire army. And a side note here, I've heard a lot of people say that when they build a list with Saren, they want to build it with number of models so that she can feed over all of them. I would never have that as a consideration for actually building the army. The Legion has too many good choices. Don't limit yourself to a number of models based on a feat. That said, because this list does only have 11, she can feed on all of them. There's a Shredder there for Blightbringer. Breaststealer is going to stop charges, make sure I get in there first, protect my Raptors a bit. I'll get into that in a minute. Respawns evil on Angelius. Mirror Magic. Arcane Shield. I'll put that on my Angelius too. Equilibrium is great for assassinations, and her daggers are as well. I have the Angelius. Angelius has a 7-inch movement with wings. It can charge 10. It has reach and armor piercing on that tail, so it has a 12-inch threat range, 14 if you slipstream it. The Seraph is there for slipstream, but also because of the strafe. And also to add a ranged element to list, he's pretty much the only ranged person here. Well, dedicated ranged, I should say. Shredder's a transfer battery and a tenacity battery. That's pretty much all he gets used for. He is, you don't want to throw him away.
Well, you just said you were going to use him for Blightbringer. That puts him out in front.
If you need to. I should have been more specific. He's there to Blightbringer if you need to, but preferably I run him back with Saren. Forsaken is for Fury Management and to try and scare stuff off the table. And an occasional Blight Shroud is not bad if you can get it, but I don't try too hard to get a Blight Shroud. People around here are too good about staying outside of its range. So he'll take it if he can get it, but otherwise he'll just help Saren run her beasts hotter. And finally, the Raptors. This is my favorite Legion unit. I love the Raptors. Speed 9, the post-action speed that they can take, a movement that they can take on the end. They get 2 shots if they don't move, but they charge, they get 3 attacks, 2 with their sword, 1 with the elk. They're weapon masters. I love casting Breaststealer on a unit, keeping them from charging, lowering their defense, having the Raptors charge in, wreck havoc, and then back out of their advanced range. It really lets them hit and run. It's god-awful for my opponents, but I really enjoy using that tactic. You know, there's a lot of nasty stuff in this list. I skipped over the Nephilim completely. The Nephilim Soldier is another long-distance charge. Basically, with wings, or with glide, he can charge over models. He's not as powerful as Angelius, but he can go in like if Angelius doesn't do the job on his own, and do the last couple points necessary to kill a target. The great thing I like about this list is it has so many threats. You can't let the Angelius get to you. You can't let the Seraph shoot you. You can't let the Raptors get to you or your army. And with Slipstream moving stuff around, you can't block every charge range or charge lane. So it's a whole lot of kill stuff to your face. There's nothing purely defensive about this other than the Shredder, who I'm, like I said, am willing to run out and Blightbringer if necessary.
What's your strategy with this list when you start playing? I mean, is this one of the typical, this is a Legion list, so go ahead and surrender now before I brutally violate you in ways that you don't want to think about? Or is this more of a working up to like a top of turn, end of round two victory?
It's capable of the quick kill, but I'm not overly, I don't always go for it. The main thing about this list is, like I said, it has so many things that can kill you that it's going to spread out, offer a lot of threats to your Warcaster and your army. You're going to have to deal with some of them. You probably can't deal with all of them. And if you don't deal with all of them, then what you didn't deal with is going to get to you.
Now, and I like what you've said there. Is this a really tactic that Legion is just really good at? And yes. And what you said, so you've got so many threats, you can spread yourself out, and that mm-hmm. you just simply can't cover every brutal threat that you've got.
Sure.
And then whatever hole that you've left, that's the one I can do. Does Legion shine at that above all the other Horde factions, or can anybody else do this?
I think Legion excels the most because there are some Circle Miles who can do it too. Like Kaya is kind of like that, but the Legion is such a glass cannon. Everything in their army can hit really hard and can die pretty quick that there are so many things your opponent has to worry about. So it kind of forces them to, it overwhelms them with options, more or less.
So that brings me to my next question. What would your advice be to counter this list? Just in general, I'm not saying, me or for anybody, just what, this is a good question. It's like, how would you think to counter this kind of a list?
You're going to keep your Warcaster in back, probably, or Warlock. Keep a couple Fury or Focus on them, depending on which game you're playing. I would recommend models around your base to keep the Angelius and the Nephilim from charging your Warcaster,
mm-hmm.
Or block line of sight. Fortunately, you can't do that with a cloud because Vila's sight, so you've got to use something else, like larger bases. The problem is, if you're grouping a bunch of miles together around your Warcaster, if I can strafe just a few of them out of the way, there's probably going to be space for the Angelius to get in there, and that's not a good thing. Especially if, I kind of didn't mention this yet, but, Saren feats, none of her army can be targeted by melee attacks, and then they run into your front lines and things with wings fly to the back and basically kind of tie everything in place. And that can really hurt. You need to block your Warcaster, and you need to have something out front that the Raptors are going to have a little bit of problem with. They're only a mat 6, 8 on the charge, and it effectively goes up to 10 on the charge, 8 normal if Saren's put Breaststealer out. So something with a very high defense could kind of slow them down. But something like Manowar or Warmongers or other multi-wound infantry, they're probably going to go down because the Raptors are going to hit them reliably. And with Weapon Masters, they're going to start tearing through them. I have a general rule of thumb with Raptors. I love Raptors. 2 for a light, 3 for heavy. If I put 2 Raptors on a light beast or 3 on a heavy, it's probably going to go down. So, you can't even necessarily rely on beasts to get in the way. Because whatever they didn't kill, they're going to, back away from, and a Seraph or the Nephilim is going to finish it off. I'll put it this way. I let Luke play this list against me. And I don't think I'm that bad of a player. And he is 2-0 against me with this list against Resnik. Now, granted, Resnik's on a medium base, but at 500 points, it's just so hard to block all the assassination attempts coming in. You've got to get the Saren first, basically.
And I think that's telling because I will further state that I think you're an excellent player. So if somebody that's playing this list, like you said, Luke was playing this list for the first time.
The first time. He was doing real well against me for the first time. I actually did walk him through the assassination.
Sure.
Slipstream here, shoot this, get your charge in, kill Resnik. The second time, I didn't give him any help at all.
Right, and then he was slave will beat
and
you. That's telling to me just because, and you even know, the list because you put it together for him.
Mm-hmm.
So you trying to face off against it are still, you still lost to it. That's sobering. And you wonder why I don't ever want to play against you.
I think for Saren, the biggest problem I've ever had with her and probably everybody else is her feet. It's one of those feats where if you have an equally good feat or a feat that'll mess with movement or something, it's almost a trading feat situation, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of cases, she'll get her feet off first.
Because all her stuff's faster.
Because it's all faster.
Because it's a pulse, so she feats and then her stuff runs at you.
So then I counter feat with whatever one that I have that might be able to help me.
But I'm still in your
face.
You're
still right there.
Yep.
So, yeah. Now with the proliferation of magical attacks, you know, Ayana or Strange Ways or something like that, her feat is reduced a little bit some cases. Or, you know, even Epic Kane with True Shot. Still, not being able to melee somebody who's already right next to you presents a big problem for pretty much everybody. So getting around her feet, I think, is the big thing. It's kind of an obvious statement, I guess, but it's true nonetheless.
If you can get enough stuff up on her to threaten her and make her feet defensively, you've gained a big advantage. The problem is that's very hard to do because the Legion's so fast.
Right.
Especially with Slipstream, which is why it's in the list.
Or if I can get a lot of stuff up there, I'm thinking from a Crix perspective at the moment, you know, let's say I've got Epic Scar, I've got all 21 Satixes on the board.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in your face, but it doesn't matter because I still got to actually hit you. You're going to have Tenacity on her. That means I got to roll eights, I think, with a Satixes or something to hit you. And that's assuming that I'm not in melee because of that Angelus you have right next to her. I mean, yeah, you know, it's going to be so hard to get up there without taking free strikes and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you have the low model count, even against a horde of models on your opponent's side, it's still going to be difficult for them to feat aggressively against you or to do something aggressive against her.
I think Blightbringer is an awesome spell against these hordes. And sure. I'm going to relate something that happened to me the first time I played Saren is I put it on a swordsman, just kind of block people getting the ones behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a Shredder. And a guy was playing a unit of Wolves of Ouroboros, and he charged up, circled around me and stabbed a DF because they have reach. They can reach from outside the cloud. They killed the Shredder. Next turn, a swordsman walked up in the middle of the nice semicircle he made to CRA through the Blight Shroud.
Mm.
And I wiped the entire unit off the table for three focus, for three fury.
Yeah.
That sort of ability is just god awful to go up against. You can't, like, you're talking about using your Satixis. One Blightbringer is gonna wreck havoc. Even Blight Shroud, a POW 8 on the Forsaken, is going to chew through some of those low armor models.
Yeah.
You need to get to her early. I think an early game ambuscade could wreck her day.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't
even bother targeting her at that point. Just hit her beast.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get her beast down to low armor and then start wailing on her, well, she can transfer as much as she wants. She's still taking damage.
Mm-hmm.
What's her health count? How many boxes does she have?
She's got 16 life.
That's pretty respectable. But
14 armor.
Right. Which isn't the lowest in the world, but it's still not good.
Right.
7 Fury, though, that can still give her a lot of transfers.
It can.
Especially, she has Rapport? Or is that Ryze?
That's Ryze.
Okay.
What do you guys think about Scorn?
For Scorn, say Deathbringer with Hexorus, you can easily pick away at that beast little by little if you have enough models around it.
Well, Angelus isn't tough. You're not even going to have to necessarily pick away.
Sure. What's its armor? 14? 15?
It's 17 armor, but it's 14 defense.
Oh, okay. I had it backwards. I thought it was higher defense.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things Scorn has going for them is they're going to have a lot of, like, Centrati multi-wound units, which Blightbringer's not going to be quite as well.
Mm-hmm.
However, if they get Breaststealer put on them, those units are locked in place pretty much.
Sure, even more than they usually are.
Yeah. And actually, it's the same thing against Trolls. That's what I've used against Trolls a lot.
You know, maybe once or twice I've played against Saren with a non-medium-based Warlock, but I think the only times I remember playing against her was when I was playing Trolls,
mm-hmm.
or I had Chromac where I had a medium based mm-hmm. Warlock, and of course that begs for the Angelus to thrust you to death. I can't even think of playing against her with a small based Warlock.
It is a little bit easier because you don't have the thrust. But,
well, it's easier to hide too,
right? Yeah, but there are so many weapons in the list that it's going to be hard to take care of all of them.
Well, luckily the Raptors at least can't ignore stealth like all your beast skin,
right?
Gorshade or something, in either form, can survive a little bit against this.
Gorshade's doubly evil because he causes terror and the Raptors are not fearless.
This is also true, yeah.
You know, the Raptors they'll charge if they can. Obviously, if regular Gorshade is Cloak of Shadowing, they're not going to get the charge off, which they still have a decent speed, but they need that extra die.
Yeah.
Actually, regular Gorshade could probably cause some problems in many ways.
Oh, I think
by
so.
By preventing charges and shooting, that's most of what this list does.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say his Mage Blight would really hurt, but she can still feet outside and then rush her army in. Yes. So the Mage Blight won't help a whole lot.
He'll still be corralling her.
That's true. That's true.
Any other really good options you see for Crix?
I'd say Denegra, but she's the answer to everything.
My army can't move and your army can't move. Yay! Yeah.
Although, I would probably trade that feat. 500 points. You know, it's been so long since I played a 500-point Crix army. I can't even think of what I would take.
I think the Arknode Swarm would do real well against this list. If you can get the initiative with the Arknode Swarm, you can weave in between my models because I don't have that many and get Drawl Beat on Saren and spell her to death. True. However, I have enough fast-moving models that I'm going to try to engage and kill those Arknodes quickly.
True.
So although there's a timer on that. You've got to beat the clock.
I think the Coven, and I'd say it, but I think the Coven would actually be really good because even if you were to engage something, you can spend two of your nine to ghostwalk that guy out and still get up with Saren.
Sure.
That'll only leave you with two Stitching Abysses, but sometimes...
Or anybody with Ghostwalk and Scarlock, but yeah.
Well, that's only Denegra in her.
Right.
In the Coven. And actually, you know what? With the few models you have, granted that I'm going to have all fewer Arknodes than you have models, but you're still going to have a time trying to engage them all. Because I can leave one back as far as I probably need to, and then rush it forward. So actually, yeah. Arknode spamming would be actually a pretty good answer to this list, I think.
Yeah, and in that case, Saren's going to have to camp on Focus. Or Fury. Absolutely,
yeah. Which may not be bad, because then she can transfer all she wants.
Right.
So you still have to wail on the beasts one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I played this game, or this list in the Stampede, I got to use the Nephilim Soldier a lot as a sacrificial pawn. He would take the strike from the enemy if I had to give it up. I would, if it was necessary, I would do the same thing against Crix, put it out there to try and block some of the Arknodes getting to her, or, you know, just be in the way. If he dies, he's probably the model on this list that I care the least about.
Mm-hmm. You know, earlier I was talking about what I've taken against this list. I do remember one time taking Asphyxius, again, a medium-based model, against her, and I was really close to getting her with the Breath of Corruption spam. Mm-hmm. She cannot handle that if she only has a
Gear
on her.
Oh, no.
Luckily for my opponent, he had a handful of Shredders out there, so he had a little popcorn list thing going. And since she can't redirect a magic AoE, Breath of Corruption can miss her as usual, you know, if you can get the Arknode up there. So actually, Asphyxius is a good answer to her, I think.
It's a big game of chicken.
Sure.
She's Angelius.
And Shadow Wings, he's very maneuverable.
Right.
So
yeah. What about Signar, Pat?
Let's see. As far as Signar goes, I think I'd probably lean toward either Prime or Epic Kane, both of them for the ranged combat ability. Since you've got that feat that denies my melee, mm-hmm. I'd probably rely more on the ranged aspect of my faction.
Sure.
And I like, you know, regular Kane could shoot you from, you know, 18 inches away, so I could stay back, which you had already said.
Squire.
That's right, which you've already said is a good idea. So that is... I think that would be nice. Now, you know, his feet would go sort of unused in that, because if I'm going to be staying away, I'm probably not going to be able to shoot anything. And all the stuff that you've got in here is fairly...
If you could catch the raptors in the feet, I think you'd have a good go of them.
And Shredder, too. You can always ping away the Shredder with that one shot.
Yeah. So that would be good. Now, you know, an Epic Kane also, would be nice. You know, he's got to get a little bit closer, but his feet turn certainly could be bad, as long as you keep True Shot up. I've learned that. Never drop True Shot. Vader taught me that.
Well, the thing with Epic Kane, if Saren feats, and say the Angelus rushes right up next to you, you're a gunfighter. You kill him anyway. It doesn't matter that you're in melee.
So with his, you know, with his gunfighter ability, I could get up, like you said, I could be right up next to her, even on the feet turn, and use my spellstorm pistols to make the attacks against her. So that would be good. Also, I would definitely put Ion and Holt in the list, because they can at least give one other model the ability to make magic attacks.
Like Old Rowdy.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, some like one of my Jacks or Old Rowdy, something like that.
And Holt is another two guns, which can't hurt.
That's true. So, I think that
your main key is going to be some like long gunners that can CRA are really going to chew through my high defense. And then on top of that, you just need something that can slow me getting to you, because I'm going to be running across the table 10, 12 inches at a time.
Blightbringer is not a cloud, is that right?
It is not a cloud.
Because what I was thinking of, you put Blightbringer in front of the Angelius, who's going up to engage all the long gunners, but you can't do that. She doesn't have any other cloud,
no,
right?
No, she does not. And there is no Gobber in this list.
Right.
And, like you said, considering this is against Legion with the whole Isle of Sight, I guess this would be a list where I would leave the Trenchers at home, because they really wouldn't do a whole lot for me.
See, I hear that from a lot of Signar players, and I don't buy it. And I don't buy it because... One, they have CRA, they can get through my defense, and two, they can slow me down a bit. They can't slow down things with wings, obviously. But Raptors can't move through them. Now, if they kill them and move on, great, but you know, you stagger them so I can't kill all of them, and it's gonna slow me down and allow you to shoot me. And that's what trenchers, I mean, that's 82 point speed bump, but it's still mm-hmm. a speed bump.
That's true. And I guess it depends, again, since this is a 500 point list, that also limits it.
That's
in,
true.
In a larger point list, that might be, I might want to do say, oh, I can take trenchers and long gunners, but 500, it's either or, man.
That's a good point. You
know, we should also point out, I was talking about Epic Kane. There's no Epic Kane.
I'm sorry, you're right. So,
but regular Kane can
that's,
do just
that's
as
true.
Well, yeah, you can expand upon this to make a 750 pretty
sure.
easily.
Yeah. So, if you were to bump it up to 750, the same kind of thing is going to hold. So, yeah, then you might be able to do trenchers and the long gunners. I do like the long gunners, like you said. Well, the long gunners would be good with, say, like, obviously with Kane, because then they could be shooting 20. So they could stay back and have maybe two rounds worth of shooting before you're right up in their face and they're done. I don't know. Maybe not. You may be able to neuter the long gunners after your first turn. I'm not sure.
I can't quite get 20 inches in one turn, even with slipstream.
Okay. So yeah, I think I'm going to rely on my, what Signar is known for, you know, ranged attack and some magic. Throw it in there just to counter it. And, yeah, I'll have to try this list. I'll have to try to go against this at some point just to see. And it'll be brutal.
You know, other than her feet turn, Sword Knights with the new UA could F this list up something awful.
This is true.
Yeah, and that's the whole point. Yeah, the whole point of that new UA is to pull the Sword Knights into it. And
that's why I'm going to feet run some up there and Lightbringer them.
Yeah.
I've got to get to them first.
Yeah, that's Lightbringer's nasty. POW 12.
Now, it does cost 3 Fury.
Well, yeah, but POW... I've never faced this spell, so I was reading the description, and I think I understand it, but... If I understand it correctly, you can't cast it on a model and then have that model move and everything that it moves
over.
That
is correct.
It's when it first comes in, and then if something...
You must enter the AoE. It's not if the AoE gets placed on you.
That's good, because that would certainly be nasty to have some guy just run.
Oh, if I could do that, there would be a Harrier on this list. Let me tell you, thing would be flying over your entire army.
That would be sick.
Another thing about the Sword Knights, though, even with Blightbringer, if they're defensive lined and arcane shielded, they're armor 19. You got to roll an 8 to kill one. And granted, you're going to catch a handful of them, but they're always usually spread out anyway.
Sure, but if they're arcane shielded, then now Saren's armor 17.
If she's that close, she's already dead. Because what's the range on mirror magic?
And if the spell's in her control radius, she casts it.
Oh, never mind then. I thought it was like an 8 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only two factions we haven't talked about now. Kador.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like AoEs. I hate seeing AoEs.
She loves AoEs.
Well, if you're shooting her, sure. Not her raptors. Any sort of AoE list from Kador, you know, especially with something like Signs Importance up,
mm-hmm.
that it's just going to chew through stuff. Other than AoEs, Kador has a lot of things with high mat.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to get through my defense,
mm-hmm.
and that's not going to be pleasant.
And the things with high mats cause a lot of damage as well.
Yeah.
So that's all they need. You know, Yuri and a couple Manhunters could tear apart any few things in this army.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. Their cav wouldn't be too bad as long as the... Forsaken's not too close.
Hey, that's why they got Markov, or whatever his name is.
Yeah, but I think Kador has probably got the easiest time with this. I mean, mm-hmm. even the Butcher, their one medium warcaster, mm-hmm. medium-based warcaster, and Angelius cannot kill that in one attack.
No, and when you hit the Butcher, you're going to take that retaliation if it's regular Butcher.
Yeah.
And that's going to hurt.
That's going to hurt a lot. It's going to be a dead Angelius.
So you wouldn't even get in that situation in the first place, probably.
So, yeah, there's a whole lot of problems going against Kador.
Sure.
Even Greylord sprays.
Oh, yeah. Especially after they hit you and then they spray you. If they got a cold in or two.
Well, I don't think they're going to hit me in melee because they have to actually kill the model to get that spray. And their mat's only.
They have to kill 6. The model?
Yeah. I mean, even IFP are good.
Choosing the branch.
Just the fact that they're CMA and they start at POW 13, they're going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
The old witch is going to be a little bit cagey, especially if she feats and all of a sudden I can't move. I really want to move.
Yeah.
And I can't.
Some of your beasts get your Angelius, for example, armor 17 against the 14 or whatever her feet would do. You could still move through that.
Sure, but I don't want to send him too far up on his own.
Well, no, but I don't think it would prevent you from doing what he normally does.
No, she'd have to feed early. She has to feed early to keep me back and get an extra round of, say, shooting or something like with mortars or widowmakers or whatnot.
Right. Your raptors would definitely be pinned in place at least. They'd die.
Oh, yeah.
They'd die from the POW 14.
Ugh. As far as the protector goes, well, don't play Resnik.
Yeah.
That medium base really sucked when I tried that.
Is he your only medium base?
He is. Well, the Harbinger.
Harbinger, okay, large.
She's large.
Which she, is, would, she would die really.
Yeah, she would. Yeah. Yeah, I don't even think about that.
Yeah.
TFG of the unit attachment, causing fire to things would be very, very fun to do.
Yeah.
They also cause terror, so they would potentially slow up the Raptors.
Are you thinking with the UA or just Epic Fiora?
They have to have the UA to cause fire.
Right, but they, don't need, but they don't need the UA with Epic Fiora, do they, to cause fire? Don't they automatically cause fire?
No.
Really?
No.
Huh. Maybe I just always see her with the UA on those guys.
You do. At least when I play them.
Yeah.
Then again, this is also 500 points.
That's also true.
Zealots. I wish I didn't have Razik in my list because my Zealots would have had a lot of fun. Because bombs aren't ranged, or bombs aren't melee attacks.
That's true.
And those bombs are going to, like we said, AoE is already going to wreak havoc to this list. Bombs are going to be even worse because there's 10 of them.
Yeah.
Krios would, knock everything down, and then those bombs are going
to
hit.
He has a very good counter feat to this, actually. You know what? He says, go ahead, please, feet first.
Yeah.
Send you right in my face, and I'll knock you down, and then you die.
Exactly. So I think, the Projector, it has some pretty good answers. Some of them are not so easy. I mean, regular Fiora can set everything on fire and throw out a firewall, blocking the Raptors. Yeah. They can go around it, they won't be able to charge.
You know, you're talking about Resnick. Obviously, he's a good target for the Angelus, but his feet can totally hose her.
Yeah, but he's got to get to her.
Well, he's got to be within 12, right?
Well, no, I mean, he can take her Fury, but he still has to have something to actually kill her.
Well, sure, but if you can get something up there, she's a sitting duck.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you can get to her,
sure.
Then, yeah, stripping her Fury is going to be great.
That's really the name of the game for any of these, though. Getting to the caster or the Warlock, you've always got to get to them. But she does play back a little bit, so she's a little more difficult to get to, maybe.
Yeah. She's going to be pretty much 14 inches back from her beast that's furthest upfield, unless she's had to Blightbringer.
Yeah.
If you can force her to Blightbringer, maybe bunch up some troops, kind of try and sucker her in a bit.
Sure.
Then you've got a decent chance of getting to her if the Protector player takes the bait.
I think, I hate playing against her, but one good thing about playing against her is that one way or another, it's probably going to be a fast game. You think?
I think that's, in most cases, I think that's true.
You think were you hesitating because maybe her feet would delay it a little bit?
I've played one or two games where I've had to really delay with Saren, and it's been a real run and dodge type of game, and it's been very hard, and I can't remember how they've ended.
How big were the games?
They were either 5 or 750, I don't remember.
Right.
As far as Steamroller goes, unfortunately, a lot of these models don't have a lot of hitting power, a lot of these models don't have a lot of staying power. So, Saren's feet can let me hold a territory for a turn, but after that, I've pretty much got to kill your Warlock or Warcaster. Mm-hmm. It's going to be pretty much an assassination try to win, because sitting in the mosh pit and waiting for you to come to me is a death sentence for a Legion.
Mm-hmm.
I can't play like that with this army.
This one's about advancing, and sitting in the middle isn't going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally.
Yeah. I mean, they will get to the point first.
Sure.
But now that scenarios aren't hold it and win, it's, hold it starting turn 3 or so.
Right.
It's not nearly as easy.
Mm-hmm.
They could, maybe if you're playing a slow army, luckily, cleared out with some lucky Blightbringers.
I could see that.
But other than that.
Scorn and Trolls would have difficulty, I think.
Yeah. I could see her maybe winning on scenario against Scorn.
Mm-hmm.
Block your opponent, Blightbringer a few things out of the way, and hold the pit. But that's going to be a rarity.
This is not going to be too often, but what about playing this list against Legion?
Big game of chicken.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've actually, now that you mentioned that, I've done that. I saw that game. Against another Saren player.
That's right.
And this list has something that the other Saren player did not, arranged elements.
And I think he had the...
He had the Spawning Vessel and Warmongers instead of me having the Nephilim and the Raptors.
I'd rather have those over the Spawning Vessel. And,
yeah.
Even Warmongers.
I basically charged his line. I feeded, held all his stuff in place. Mm-hmm. He charged me, feeded. I backed up and shot him.
Yeah.
Killed the Angelis that way.
The Warmongers bring to mind the Raptors not being fearless. Do you have a problem with them running away?
I had to run around the outside of his army and shoot at the Spawning Vessel Acolyths and the Forsaken in the back.
Really, the Raptors flank a lot anyway, so that wasn't too much different than you'd usually
do. Not the way I play them.
Yeah.
I mean, they can run up a flank, but I want them hitting your lines. And I want, even your frontline troops, I want them getting those swords and the elk in there and killing stuff in melee. And they can do that from a flank, but they're still ultimately going to be going towards the heart of your enemy anyway.
Interesting. I guess I haven't played against... I guess when I've seen them, it's mostly been you playing, and it's been so long, I can't remember exactly how you play them. So, yeah, I need to play a couple games against Legion again because I've just gotten out of touch with them, unfortunately.
I need to practice with Epic Lilith.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, is that all we got to talk about?
I think that's it, Pat. You got anything else you want to add?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, until next time.
See you later.
These are the days of our lives. Iron Agenda is copyright 2008 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license, with opening and closing music provided courtesy of Joshua Salter.